This is a recording of the main speaker meeting with Donald H. from Orange County, California, taped at the first California Mid-State Regional Convention for NA in Fresno, California, on Saturday, June 30th, 1990. In observance with the 11th tradition stating anonymity at the public level, please keep this tape within the fellowship and observe the anonymity of all NA speakers.
Shine it. Okay, I get to do it again. Well, hell, I didn't type this out. Announcement. We would like to request a prompt exit from this space in order to facilitate the next event, which is the Saturday night dance. Which requires registration. A badge. Okay, now I'd like to do Barbara C. for the roll call and the countdown.
My name's Barbara, and I'm an addict. So what length did we travel to get here? Who came the furthest to get here tonight? We got Canada. Florida. Clovis. Okay, I'm going to call the name of your city. And when you hear it, let us know you're here. Anaheim! Angels Camp! Antioch! Valley. Borrego Springs. Chowchilla. Clovis. No one wants to admit it? Concord! Exeter! Fremont! Fresno! Gardena! Gardena! Groverville! Up! Hanford! Oscar! Ivanhoe! Turbin! Lawndale. Livermore. Lamina. Los Anos. Los Altos. Los Altos. Madera.
Yay!
Manteca.
Yay!
Merced. Modesto. Oakland. Oakley. Porterville. Pittsburgh, California. Sacramento. San Francisco. San Diego. San Fernando Valley. San Jose. Sanger. Santa Cruz. Selma. Sonora. Squaw Valley. Stockton. Torrance. Twainhart. Tulare. Visalia. Venice. Reno, Nevada. New Orleans, Louisiana. Olympia, Washington. New York. Alaska. London, England. Los Angeles. Moreno Valley. Well, you were just recognized. Yes, Yeah, my favorite part of Saturday night at conventions is always the recovery countdown. So we're going to start out with, does anybody here have 30 years recovery clean time? 29 years. 28, 27. We have a sheet signed by the whole convention for you to take home with you to remember tonight. Six. 7 months. far. Three. Two. Now, we all know in Narcotics Anonymous all we really have is one day. But here at this convention, we want to know who the one-day newcomer is. Is there anybody here with 24 hours?
My name's Ricky, and I'm an addict.
I happen to know this little motherfucker.
Yeah, she does.
So we're going to give Ricky a basic text. We'll pass it around during the speaker meeting. Everybody put your phone numbers in it for him, huh? Is there anybody here with less than one day? Come on up.
I'm Eric. I'm an alcoholic drug fiend.
We just happened to have three basic texts to give away, and that's how many people needed it. Ricky. Since Ricky was the first one to raise his hand, he gets the newcomer sheet. This is a little addendum to the original format for this evening. At this time, I'd like to introduce the chairperson of the convention committee and ask her to step to the podium, please. Jackie A. Our vice chair, John C. Our treasurer, Teresa W. Sabrina H., our rep for the ASC and the RSC. And you people, we worked our butts off. Corresponding Secretary, Cindy A. Recording Secretary, Sherry W. Registration, Dana G. Hospitality, Irene T. Merchandising, Ken B. Marathon, Sherry W. and Lisa V. Service, Paula Y. Quality Assurance, Jack N. and Tom L. They're out busy quality assuring. Fundraising, Jennifer T. Arts and Graphics, Barbara C. Entertainment with Jackie. And I was your program chair. And at this time, I'd like to turn the meeting back over to Moses.
You guys leave me alone. Okay, I was at a convention in 1986 in Long Beach, and I attended a men's stag there, and I heard this guy share for the first time. And when we were on the programming committee, when the people submitted their tapes, we all listened to these people, and it was real hard to select, you know, who was going to get to share their experience, strength, and hope with us. Anyway, I'd like to introduce our main speaker for tonight from Moreno Valley, Donald H. Give him a good hand.
Donald Maddox. And I thank God for keeping me clean today, and it's good to be in Fresno. I also like to let you know that God's not against us. Yeah, God's on our side. See, I came around here low down and did a Dauphine, and y'all let me come to these meetings. I came around here low down and did a Dauphine. Not only did y'all let me come to these meetings, y'all give me coffee and cookies. I came out here, low down and dirty Dauphine, and y'all hugged me and told me it's going to be all right. I came out here, low down and dirty Dauphine, and after the meeting, y'all told me to keep coming back. Had nobody ever told me to keep coming back. In fact, they were telling me, didn't I tell you to get out of here? I came around here, low down and dirty Dauphine, and y'all loved me. Even though I didn't love myself. I'm going to tell you how I got here. I have to tell you how I got here. because when I tell you what happened when I got here, after I got here, I'm going to tell you about God. You know. So I have to tell you what God had to work with. I was born and raised in Texas, Galveston. And that might be 95% of the problem. But it's not. And I had a pretty good life, you know, when I was young in my house. I have three brothers and a sister. And after I grew up, I went out and played with my friends. And, you know, like, I had a mother, no father. I wouldn't have a lot. And I wouldn't have underclothes on most of the time. And my friend used to point and laugh and talk about me, you know. And that didn't feel good, but I was 4 or 5, and I couldn't tell nobody what had hurt me when you talk about me, so I would go to slapping them, you know. I mean, all through life, that's how I dealt with things. If I couldn't slap you, I'd run away from you, you know. One or the other. When I was about 6, I had a friend that came from Louisiana named Leroy. Yeah. And we did a lot of things together, you know. Stole bottles, stole plums, hunted pigeons, you know. All them things that you do. And as we went on, Leroy's father was an alcoholic. He drank his drugs, I should say. And you know where I'm from, they used to have street dances. As I got older, 13, 14, they had street dances. And I never would dance, you know. I didn't have a girlfriend because I was too shy to talk to a girl. And I started to stop fighting because I was a coward. I really didn't like to fight unless you was about this much smaller than I was. You know. Unless I knew I had edge. I mean, without a doubt, I had to have the edge, you know. I ain't gonna fight. You know, I remember one night we went to a street dance, and they said, let's go get some of these liquid drugs. And I did. I went with them. And we drank these drugs, and you know, a lot of things happened. I came back to the street dance, and I could dance, you know. And I also talked to them girls. They had to push me out of their face, you know. Get back, boy. And I went home that night, and my mother whooped me, you know. And it wasn't. She used to always have to whoop me. I was a hard-headed little child, and she would have to whoop me. But it didn't hurt that time. I didn't have to fake that cry that time, you know. So I found that, you know, when I want to dance, I can go buy me some dance at the drugstore. Or when I want to talk to one of them girls, I can go buy me some talk to a girl at the drugstore. Or when I want some courage, I can, they had sold it in a bottle. And I can drink some drugs and have some courage, you know, just act just like I ate, you know. So I went through from that point on taking those drugs, you know, and I got thrown out of high school as a result of drinking drugs. And then later on I enlisted into the Marine Corps as a result of drinking those drugs. And you know, like, I thought I wanted to go to the Marine Corps, you know. It wouldn't have been so bad, but I enlisted in 1967. And they, you know, they had a war going on. And I really thought I wanted to go to the war, you know, because where I'm from, you know, I never had seen anybody get killed. I mean, I just thought people just grow old and go away somewhere. I didn't really believe that people really got killed. And they sent me to Vietnam. And all, I had a concept of war, but when I got there, you know, like, they were killing people. See, I had a kind of like a John Wayne concept of war. See, I would watch John Wayne one night in one movie, and if he get killed, I'll see him the next night in another movie. But man, I got to Vietnam, they were killing people. So what I wanted to do is come home. So they gave everybody a shovel, a little old shovel about this long. So I gave my shovel to a friend of mine and told him to break my leg and suck my leg out and tear my head. See, if I can get my leg broke, I can come home. And it didn't matter what you was going to say about me when I got home. You know, I know you was going to call me a coward, but you had called me a coward before I left. It wasn't nothing. I just didn't want to die in Vietnam. I wanted to come home. In fact, I had a walk home. I didn't know what direction to go in. This guy wouldn't break my leg. But I told him, hey, you put yours out there, I'll break yours. But he had another interest. He wanted to get some ribbons. The purple kind, the purple heart. And you know, anybody that know anything about Vietnam, if you ain't country 2 weeks, a couple of days, somebody gonna shoot at you, might hit you, you know. He wanted to get wounded. But he wasn't willing for me to moon him with that E-tube. I stayed in the country about 3 months. And the motor round hit it from me one day. They picked me up and threw me down. And I was looking, turned in such a way I was looking at the sky. My head say I was in hell without a funeral. Because the metal was hot. You know, I was burning, I was looking at the sun, I just knew I was in hell and didn't have a funeral. You know, I heard some people howling, talking. And then I knew I had a chance. They took me from there to the hospital. And what this mortar round did, it broke my jaw, it broke my wrist, it broke my left wrist, my left arm, my left elbow, my right leg, and my right ankle. It paralyzed me on the right side. I had a tracheostomy and a colostomy. A tracheostomy is where they cut your neck so you can breathe. And a colostomy is where you defecate out your side. You know, I remember the next morning, I got hit December the 17th. I made 20 December the 15th, about 2 days after my birthday I got hit. But I remember on the 18th coming to, I looked across the ward. And this guy was in the bed, and his bed was going up and down like that, and he had lost one leg. So I assumed I was on the ward where people lose legs, you know. And I got to checking out what I had. I know that I couldn't move, but I saw my legs were there. Only leg I can move was my left leg. And I was there moaning, and this nurse walked by and asked me, did I want a pain shot? Now, I didn't know what a pain shot was. You know, but what my head told me she was saying is, I didn't have enough pain, she wanted to give me some more pain. And I thought she had to be crazy. She's with the North Vietnamese Army. And she came by a couple more times and asked me about the pain shot. And then she just brought me, she got tired of me morning, she brought me a pain shot. And I wondered what took her so long. Where you been? You know. I was in Da Nang Hospital, and every morning about 6 o'clock, the Vietnamese would shoot rocket rounds at the hospital. And every evening about 6 o'clock, they would shoot rocket rounds at the hospital. I mean, you can set your clock by. You know, it's coming. And what they would do to me, they would run by and throw a little in a tube on me and run out to the foxhole. So what I started doing, I couldn't talk. I couldn't eat. What I started doing, I started hitting on the bed my left leg. This lady would bring me a pain shot. That's the only communication we ever had. I'd hit on the bed, she'd come on with the pain shot. So every morning about 5:45, I hit on the bed. every evening about 5:45 I eat on the bed. In fact, every time I'd go out and come back too, I'd hit on the bed. Because I was terrified, you know, like, hey, man, what is this? You know, people don't supposed to die. You ain't even got me all torn up. I don't know what to do. Put me to sleep. I don't want to face this here. Knock me out. I left Da Nang January 19th, 1968. I went to Guam. They covered the trade house to me, and I was able to talk, and I asked for a pain shot. I was in Guam 2 weeks, and we left Guam. We was coming back to America, and we had to stop in Honolulu to get a Purple Heart. And I was on this Air Force hospital ship. They tell me, hey, you finna get a Purple Heart. The general's coming on board now. I said, that's all right, give me a pain shot. I never saw the guy give me a Purple Heart. And I left there and we came to Travis. And they said, well, hey, you're back in the States and you can call home and the phone is in the next room and the Red Cross won't pay for it. I say, that's all right, send the nurse down with a pain shot. I never made the call. And from that time, for 16 months, they had to give me some drugs, you know, pain shot. They said, what's your name? Pain shot. Where you live? Pain shot. Where you going? Pain shot. Yeah. That's all it's about. Yeah. But I don't want to deal. I don't know how to deal, you know. I got out of the service and after staying in the hospital 16 months, and I went back to Texas. I got to hanging out with Leroy. Yeah. And Leroy was shooting heroin. And I found that heroin that Leroy was shooting was just like them pain shots I had been shooting. But not only was I taking pain shots, I was taking sleeping pills, everything, you know, just pour it down me, you know. And I started shooting heroin at Leroy, you know. First I went and got a job, at the post office. And I used to get loaded and go to work. I remember one time I was coming back from work and I was loaded and something happened to my car and I got up under on the freeway and that's why the police pulled me out from under. I gnawed out under the car. Man. Yeah. I mean, engine going, fumes going everywhere. I'm just... Yeah. And I swam around in Galveston, you know. And I remember I used to like to shoot dice. And I was full of some Tylenol one night and I was shooting dice. And me and this guy was betting and we were supposed to be betting $16, you know. But every time I placed a bet, I had to cover my eyes so I can try to see what I was doing. Focus in, and I would drop 16, and the guy would drop 8. And, you know, after I came back from Vietnam, I was terrified. So what I did was I got me a couple of them big old pistols and carried them around. Somebody talk crazy, I'll shoot at the pool house. Pow, pow, pow. Real wild, you know. So what happened in the fair game, the guy knew I got these big pistols, and what happened is I got shot in the leg. And they had to take me to the hospital. And the doctor told me I got to the hospital right on time. You know, if you'd have been a little later, you probably would have bled to death. In fact, they had to clamp off one of my arteries. And I swam around in Texas, in Galveston, and I caught a couple of cases. You know, and they gave me a 10-year probation. And maybe a week or so after they gave me a 10-year probation, they called me burglarized. So what that means is I got to go do this dime. But while I was burglarizing, you know, I had some jewelry. And I like to say I had plenty of jewelry, but maybe 90% of it was costume. In fact, what I ended up doing was getting enough to get a pinch of dope. Now, where I'm from, they had grams and they had half a gram, and then the guy would take a pinch and put it in a pinch of dope. Cost $11. And then out of this big old jewelry heist I had made, I had enough to sell a little Tom X watch for $12 and give me a pinch of dough. But I cut my arm and they had to go sew me up, and the police told the doctor, call us when you finish sewing him up. And you know, like, and it took a little longer because they didn't want to wait. It took a little while. So when the doctor finished sewing me up, he walked off and I walked off too. Oh yeah, I wasn't going to wait to go to jail. That's dead. See, if I have to go to jail, catch me. Yeah, shoot me in the back. I'm gone. I left Galveston. I went to Houston. You know, and, I was stumbling around in Houston for a little while. And I was stumbling around one day and I walked by a truck with some lawnmowers in it. I looked at the truck and I said, if the keys are in this truck, I'm going to take it. And the keys were there and I backed the truck out and cut out. But what happened is I didn't raise the tailgate. So I got lawnmowers jumping everywhere. And people honking at me to tell me about my lawnmower. I left Houston and I went to San Antonio in that truck. And I went to San Antonio for one purpose. All the while I used drugs, they used to tell me they had good dope in San Antonio. And that's the reason I went to San Antonio, see how good the dope was. And I got there and I sold a lawnmower edge or something like that. And was able to go buy some dope from one of these guys. And the sad thing about it is the guy said, hey, I'm going to tell you this, but you got to go in this whole house and shoot it. And I used to do that. See, in Galveston, I used to sell stuff, you know. And when I run out of stuff to sell, I put some coffee, some sugar in there. I had a mouthful of balloon. Yeah. But if you walk coming toward me, you see smoke coming off my head because you know I'm finna burn you. I'm going to set you on fire. And this guy said, you got to go in his old house and shoot these drugs. And, you know, I went and did that, you know. It could have been rat poison or whatever, you know. I mean, I never did, you know, check it out, you know. I never did question what was in the balloon, you know. And, I had this truck. After I finished that, I had enough money to go. I got my little motel room. And I parked this truck in the motel lot. The next morning I woke up and I opened the door and I seen all kind of police cars around this truck. I said, man, they got me. Because, you know, like I know they wanted me for stealing that truck. And what they were, police were doing, they were in there eating breakfast. This is a breakfast shop, baby. And I said, I'm going to leave the truck. I said, no, I'm not going to leave the truck. I went and got the truck and backed off and went off. I went to a VA hospital. And it wasn't the first one I had been to. I'd been on a methadone program a couple of times. You know, I get on methadone, 90 days, rest. Then I go back out and run. I went to this program and they said, we don't have the program here, but we'll send you to Dallas. I went to Dallas. They moved me. Can you hear me now? All right. I went to Dallas and I got on a methadone program there. And I stayed there 30 days on the methadone program. Let me tell you about my leg. I have a leg up until 1980. There was a hole in it. You know, you can see the bones. There was a hole in the bones, a hole in the tibia. And I could always go to the doctor and say, I'm hurting, and give me this, I'm hurting, give me that, you know. And I went to Dallas, and I was on a methadone program in 30 days, and after that, I moved into the YMCA, you know. And I stayed there a little while. Because my hustling skills, all my courage had went on, you know. I wasn't willing to hustle like I used to, you know. I wasn't willing to burn people, whatever. I didn't have really have a hell of a hustle, you know. I just had a plan, you know. I wake up 7 o'clock and go by Jack in the Box, see if I can tap the till, you know. That don't work. I go by A&P, see if I can snatch a purse. That don't work. I go by the hospital, see if I can snatch a CB or something, you know. That don't work. I gotta do that. But it's always a plan. Every day there was a plan when I was using them drugs. You always got to do something. Well, I'm moving to the Y. And I remember I met this guy named Reverend. I remember one day I found myself laying on top of Reverend. You know. Wondering why did I leave Donald? You know. Because this wasn't Donald. And what I remember the Reverend telling me, you know, I know you ain't got it in. See, because I had it between them cheeks. I wasn't willing to go in at that time. You know. And I like to tell you that, I would like to say that the reason I was born in the Reverend is because he's going to give me a half ounce of stuff or whatever. But the real reason was I was broke and he promised to buy me a hamburger, no coke. Yeah. Yeah. And I stumbled around there a little longer, and one day I went to the doctor to be, and I showed him my leg, and I said, give me some Red Devils or some sleeping pills, and he gave them to me. And I left there, I went down on Key Street in Dallas, and I tried to trade some of the Reds for some heroin. And the guy made the trade, but he decided he wanted all the Red Devils. So he pulled up in the car, pulling his big old pistol. And I did what I do best, take off running. I ran to a dead end. And what happened is I got shot under the heart. You know, but some kind of funny way, God arranged why, hey, he was in a dead end and I was able to get away after he shot me, because he shot at me a couple more times. And I ran to the street. And I tried to hitch a ride to the hospital. But no one would give me a ride. Yes. Even the Dallas County Sheriff Department went around me, trying to get a ride to the street, you know. And I was trying, I was hustling to get a ride to the street, I mean to the hospital. And then when I did, I sit down and say, I guess this is why I'm supposed to die. And I sit down. And then I jump straight back up. I continue on trying to get a ride. See, I didn't explain to you. See, when I went to Vietnam, I signed those papers to go to Vietnam. I didn't want to want to be a soldier, you know. Huck, 2, 3, 4. But when that bomb blew up, God got me out of there. God put me out of Vietnam. And in that dice game in Galveston, God don't shoot dice. I was the one betting the $16. And when that bullet penetrated my leg, God held the blood till I got to the hospital. Yeah. Yeah. It was by the grace of God I got to the hospital on time. And in Dallas, you know, when my best thinking was, hey, maybe I'm supposed to die right here, God sent the ride along. Yeah. Yeah. So if I continue on and don't tell you about what God did, you can see it. Because when things are going good and down in life, you just say, hey, that's what God was working at. You know. And when it gets crazy, hey, don't try to drive one more time. They got me to the hospital and they had to do open heart surgery. And less than two weeks after they did open heart surgery, I was shooting heroin in the hospital room. Less than 2 weeks after they did open heart surgery, I was in a wheelchair down at the methadone clinic trying to buy 60 milligrams of methadone.
real sick. I stayed in the hospital about 6 weeks. And I left Dallas. I left Texas. I threw my outfits in the trash can at the Greyhound bus station because I wasn't going to sit here on no more. And I got to Los Angeles and I shot heroin about 3 times because y'all were shooting Ritalins. Yeah. I started shooting Ritalins. Those Ritalins were awful. They are awful. You know, I used to shoot them and think, y'all watching me. So I pull the curtains down. Then I think, well, y'all know that I know that y'all watching me. I got to let the curtains back up. And there was always somebody coming. When I shot them, really, there was always somebody coming. So I would have to hide the outfit. Put it up here. No, I better put it. No, I should put it. And, you know, that was daily. I moved over on 43rd and San Pedro and I was somewhere around that shooting Ritalins. Later on, Leroy and his mother moved out here. And I moved with them and we would start shooting Preludes. I didn't like them either. Yeah. The Preludes have my heart beating out here and I don't like that. But I would shoot them on a daily basis. You know. I shoot him on a daily basis. I remember one night, I went over to this lady's house. She sold Trunols. One morning, it was about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I was banging on the door, trying to get a couple of Trunols. And they called me Mickey. She said, Mickey, you better get away from that door. I said, give me a couple of Trunols. And then she come out and throw some water on me. But I knocked on the door still. Let me have a couple of Trunols. And after she got tired, she came out, she's about this tall, and she had a pistol about that long. Say, get away from this door. And I said, let me have a couple of Trunols. And then she hauled off and bust me inside here with the pistol and said, if you don't get away from this door, I'm going to kill you. I said, that's all right, give me a couple of them Trunols. Kill me. I've been trying to kill myself for the longest. Yeah. But give me some of them truths before you kill me off. And that's what it was. Yeah. I went to any length to get mine, you know. Yeah, all right. Bust this idea and all that stuff. But give me some of them drugs. You know. One more time, God intervened. I went out to this veterans program, VA hospital. And I was in there 28 days, and they told me about a poly drug abuse and a long-term program and all that stuff. But, hey, that wasn't my problem, you know. If y'all leave me alone, I'll be all right. You know. After detox, I lasted about a couple of hours. I was coming around another 2 weeks. And I went back to this program, and they let me detox again. He told me about a poly drug abuse and a long-term program, and I listened. See, I was scared. I didn't want to die low down the dirty dope thing. You know? And what's going to happen to me? They sent me down to a recovery house. And when I was going down there, I told myself, but my head told me, you got to watch these people. Because the time I went down to recovery house in 1980. And it wasn't too long ago that the issue about Jim Jones had jumped off. So I said, hey, you might be one of them Jim Jones players, you know. You know, and I'm sorry what happened with Jim Jones, and I'm not, you know, it's not funny, and I'm not, you know, what I'm trying to say is, you know, like, some people might have had some relatives or something in here today that was caught up in that. You know, I'm just not playing with it. It's just that's what my head told me. And I went down there and they told me they were addicts. They used to use drugs. But first I went into an intake. Before I got there, they had an intake. And I talked to the guy and he interviewed me. And then he told me, let me know later on. And I found out down the line that he had told the director not to let me in. He said I knew all the right answers and all the right looks. You know, and all it was that I was whooped and I was tired. I didn't want to die low down under the dope thing. So they accepted me into this program, and I went in and they told me I had to do certain things. They told me every morning I had to get up and bust the tables. And they also told me on certain days, Tuesdays and Thursdays, I would have to go prune roses and clip roses. We had a group 3 times a week, so they would talk about me 3 times a week, you know. We had just opera, where a guy used to come in and we were me and all that stuff, you know. Like opera, you know. Linoleum, petroleum, or some kind of stuff, we used to say, you know. And then they had a lady come in and we would have to valet life, you know. And then they had a chaplain come down and we would talk to him. And I did that, you know. And I never once asked those people, what did this valet and opera and all that stuff have to do with me staying clean? See, hey, I was scared, you know, and I was willing to do whatever they say. And I hung around there. I was there 45 days and I had an operation. That hole I told you about, they wanted to cover it over. They came up with a great idea. They say, we'll cut your muscle in half and put it in the hole. You know. And I had a lot of things and all, you know, a bag of weed or something. I had been paralyzed. So that sounded all right. You know, like the fighting infection. I have a bone infection called osteomyelitis in my right leg. So I let them try. And I went to the hospital and all that stuff, and they give me them anesthesia and all like that, me and pain shots. Pain shots. Sleeping pills and pain shots. And then I got pain shots when I wasn't really hurting, you know. And I abused. But it just told me. Don't remember. The first time you ever had a pain shot, a doctor gave it to you. You know. Just remember that. And I lost 45, maybe 90 days or whatever, you know. But I gained a lot. When I go to the doctor today, it's not about no pain shot. You're not going to give me no drugs. You can write it, but I'm not going to take it. I'm going to leave you the script. I don't want it. And I went back to the recovery house. But before I went back to the recovery house, I had a counselor named Leon. He used to always talk about God. Always talk about God. And before I had this operation, he wanted me to go get baptized. See, but while I was in a recovery house for 45 days, I had all the women in the world. I had penthouses about this high, you know, with all the women. And I used to choke it a lot. You know, I used to choke it and shoot at the light, you know. See if I can ricochet off the wall for me. And we talking about getting baptized. Hey, Leon, I'm not ready to give up the choking business. And he told me, don't worry about it, just come on anyway. You know. And later on down the line, the choking business fell by the wayside. I don't have that stack of penthouses no more. You know. And I went back to the house and went on with the recovery. Also in this house, we used to go to a lot of Narcotics Anonymous meetings. You know, and we used to have a lot of book studies. And I remember seeing the first step. We admitted that we were powerless over our addiction and our life had become unmanageable. And I looked at the step and it was real confusing because it had we on it. We. I came here by myself. Who was we? I mean, when they were shooting at me in Dallas, wasn't nobody with me.
You know, when I got shot in the leg in Galveston, wasn't no, we wasn't there. Who is we? But they told me our disease is characterized by isolation. We like to isolate, you know. And told me. And the we part of this program, this is the we. And if you don't get the we part of this program, you're probably going to have a problem with the program. You know, I understand what the we is. I could never do anything. You know, because remember, Donald, best thinking was, I guess I'm supposed to die right here. That's the best thing I could come up with. Yeah. I guess this is where I'm supposed to die. Until God sent that ride along. And powers. You know. I didn't have a problem with that. You know, because those drugs had whooped me. And I remember standing in the middle of one of them VA hospitals and wondering, when am I ever be able to live out there? Because what was happening is, every so often I would have to come in there and let these people take care of me. You know, they give me a cot, they give me a meal ticket and take care of me. Give me somewhere to shower. Because some drugs have whooped me down. And they also talked about unmanageability. See, I thought they was talking about not being able to keep the lights on or something like that. See, when I got here, my life was unmanageable spiritually. I hadn't prayed in a long time. You know, I hadn't been talking to God on a regular basis. You know, physically. I mean, hey, my leg was messed up. You know, legally, those 10 years I run off from, they just didn't go away. They running right behind me, you know. So that was the unmanageable part of this program for me. And they also told me about, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore us to sanity. But I didn't think it was insane to shoot heroin in your arm. See, to be restored to sanity, you have to be insane. And I thought, hey, my head told me everybody used drugs. But it didn't tell me everybody didn't start using drugs on Monday and go for 15 years straight. I mean, even today I have friends that can take a drink this Friday and take a drink next Friday. I can never do that. You know, I shoot some drugs, I drank some drugs today, and so what's going to happen is, only thing going to stop me, they're going to catch me stealing and I have to go to jail. Or something like that. And in this hospital I was in, it's two parts. It's part where they check your eyes and do eye surgery, ear surgery, ENT, and put casts on your arms, and you know, all that stuff, heart surgery, you know. You got a dietitian over there. And there's another part with some yellow light. They don't do no surgery. They have a different kind, you know, like, they don't use surgical gloves. They have keys and locks. The middle part of that, that hospital. And what they do is they lock you up. You know, put you on one of them lock wards. So what I'm saying, I'm a nut. Straight out, zip up the front nut. Then they told me about making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And that did not take a lot. You know, because they showed me why God had got me out of Vietnam. They showed me why God had got me through that crap game. And they showed me how God had sent that ride down that Dallas, Texas street. And then a lot of more times, Well, I was supposed to be handling it and wake up right before I wreck something. I tow up something, you know. So I didn't have any problem with that. I stayed in that recovery house 14 months. An inpatient. In fact, they had to ask me to leave. Aren't you ready to go yet? No, I'm ready to go. And I was outpatient for 6 months. I learned about the phone lines in that recovery house. You know, I made some friends, and when I decided to move out, I went to a school in that recovery house. And I decided to move out, I went and got an apartment, and I had to let this guy, Leon, go look at it, check it out. I also had to deal with that 10-year probation in that recovery house. You know. And what we did, they called Texas. And they said, we have a program for people like Donald. It's called the Shock Program. What you do is, send him back here, he'll do 4 months in the penitentiary, and then we'll send him back to California. And that was a shock to me. But after a little talking and a lot of prayer, all they really wanted was some money, back probation fee, and they reinstated my probation. I mean, it's not like I was a public enemy number one, number 1,000, number 1,000,000. Well, it is. I had a couple of things of heroin they caught me with. It was, you know. So they reinstated the probation. They kept the probation in Texas, and I never reported to the probation officer. But it wouldn't have been no problem. Because also in that program, I settled that first step. See, I said out of my mouth about powerless for a long time. Until I believed it in my heart that I was powerless. Until I settled in here that I'm powerless. Now I settled. And today, and ever since that point I settled it, no matter what's happening in my life, I'm powerless. I can't use. I don't care what happens. See, I went to this school in the recovery house. And I completed the school. And I had never completed anything. And I wanted to celebrate. You know, my head said, you deserve a celebration. And they had a Baskin Robbins across the street from the school. See, all you got coming is a milkshake and a bus ride home. Because I had lost my right to celebrate. I celebrated the night that I learned how to dance. I didn't stop for 10 years. It was just one big celebration, destroying everything in my past like a hurricane, pumping up tornadoes. Yeah. I moved out of the house and I got a job. And my first job, I was wine capacitors and transistors or something, you know. And I didn't do good. I lasted about a week. I was too slow. And my next job was the circus came to town. And they needed somebody to put up posters. And I put up, the second job I had clean, I would put up posters from up and down Santa Monica Boulevard from the beach. Just a pulpit. Yeah. And one night, you know, I got to be a servant and all like that, but one day I got on my knees and prayed. I said, God, send me a woman. And I come up looking. And that's what I did. The first one I seen, there you are. So I met this woman, and we got married. And we almost killed each other. See, I'm a pretty good guy, most of the time. With one major problem. When I want my issue, I want my issue. I gotta have my issue. And I used to do all kind of things. You'd be laying on the couch eating grapes, and I'd be washing the clothes and, you know, washing the dishes, because I'm going to get my insulator on. And then she didn't give up the issue. That might have worked one day. I said, all right. Second day, hey, I want my issue. And she wouldn't give it up. I'd go 2 days. But 3 days, hey, I want my issue. Yeah. You can either give me my issue or get busy. And we were fighting one time. And she broke my ribs. Let me tell you how she broke my ribs. She's a pretty big girl, you know. And what I do is, you know, if you don't get my issue, I take it. And I was in the process of taking my issue. I was holding it down and she kneed me. I said, oh, baby. Yeah. We separated. And I cried to everybody. I cried like a baby. And then she came back for maybe a couple of more months. And we separated again. And I wanted to throw a party. No, I didn't really want to throw a party. In fact, I told the lady, hey, you know, because my sponsor named Leon, and every time he talked to me, it was about God and God and God and God. And, you know, like I had read about God and I had learned about God. A higher power is God, and I was trying to do what God's saying. And I went to tell this lady, hey, it don't have to be like this. We don't have to break up, you know. But she chose to break up, and, you know, that's what it was. A couple of months later, I got married again. And you know, I qualified this person. I asked this lady two things when I met her. Hey, do you believe in Jesus? She said, yes. And I told her, I'm not planning on being a boyfriend or girlfriend. You know, it's either about we getting married or, you know, because I ain't got no time for no boyfriend or girlfriend. I got some babies to make. And I remember before we got married, this lady chose, you know, she was a newcomer, and I bought her some things one time, and she couldn't handle it, so she went and got some of them Truanols. And that might have been all right, but she brought them back into my house. That wasn't all right. You know. In fact, I stayed home from work one day to watch it so she wouldn't go out and she could handle the fence. And, you know, when I woke up, she was coming back, and I said, where are you going? I said, she said, I've been already. She didn't kick my car, kick my money to go buy. And then I found out she had them in the house, so I threw her out. You know, and later on she came back, and we got on with the business. We've been together ever since, you know. What she is to me, she's my girlfriend, she's my wife, she's my partner, she's my friend, and she's my sparring partner. Yeah. All in one. Because I'm sick, you know. She got pregnant. And she came to my job one day and said she was spotting, and she had to go to the doctor. She went to the doctor. And I went down and I watched the television program while she went back and talked to the doctor. And what happened is the doctor, she came out crying and I asked her what was wrong. She told me that the doctor told her she's going to have a miscarriage. I said, oh, he's just a doctor. We're going to go pray about this one. You know. Because like I say, Leon talked about going and read about going. That's what we did. I mean, the doctor even told her what time the miscarriage is going to happen. Say about 12 o'clock, you have a miscarriage. So we prayed about it. And 12 o'clock came and passed.
and we named that miscarriage Donald. They played soccer and t-ball last year.
Yeah.
And a couple of years later, she got pregnant again. And they told her she had a tumor. And she called me. And I said, hey, we know what we got to do. You know, ask God. That's all we can do, ask God. And we prayed. And we named that tumor Danielle. I'm not just saying anytime I request something, God had given it to me, because I had a request about a month and a half ago when the California lottery was $60 million. I asked for it. Give it to me. He gave it to me $5 at a time. I tell you, I came around here low down and dirty, dope fiend. Take it. Y'all told me how to give it back. You know? Y'all, I came around here, y'all hugged me. And I've been hugging everybody ever since. Yeah. Y'all let me empty ashtrays. And I still do it from time to time. You know? My life is real good. By the grace of God, working you through you people in Narcotics Anonymous. See? Because when I was out there, they told me, once a dope fiend, always a dope fiend. You got to die a dope fiend. You got to die like that. And I agreed to it, but really, I didn't want to die like that. You know, die with your boots on. I didn't want to die like that. And I came around here and y'all told me, hey, you can live. They told you a lie. And I'm passing it on. That's a lie. They lied to you. Once a dolphin, always a dolphin is a lie. If they ask you, told you, say, Donald told me it's a lie. You have to die, dolphin. You can live around here. You know. That's what I do. I live around here. See, I worked them steps, and when I, you know, like, my head tell me after I worked the first three steps, I got to be perfect. I got to do everything perfect. Not so. Because I make a lot of the same mistakes. Yeah. I do a lot of the same things the wrong way. You know. I would like to tell you I don't steal. But I steal in another form. See, I work at the post office. They pay me $13.95 to cancel mail for 8 hours. For 6 of those 8 hours, big six down. I'm playing dominoes. But that's stealing. That's stealing. That's stealing from the post office. And I'm probably going to go and steal some more next week. I would like to tell you I don't lie, but I do lie. See, because when the people see me coming back to my assignment, ask me where I've been, oh, I've been over there. I don't tell them I've been in the domino shack. Yeah. And I'm probably telling the same thing next week. Y'all tell me some principles around here. You know, the only newcomer ever messed with is my wife, you know. I don't have no girlfriends. And like, you know, when I came in there, I had them stacked aside. Yeah, Judy and Janice, Andrea and Darlene, I had them all, you know. But y'all tell me some principles about not using people, not dogging people out, you know. And me and my wife have a lot of arguments. You know, but it's never been about, hey, I have another woman on the side. Or she got a man on the side, you know. I learned that well. you know. Because, hey, I don't want her to have a boyfriend, so I'm not going to have a girlfriend, you know. Yeah. Yeah. See, I can go anywhere in the world with this lady and I can hold my head up because I ain't did nothing wrong. You know, I ain't out of pocket. And that's what they say about me. That's the respect I have in this program. When they see me coming, I'm not out of pocket. You know, I ain't trying to hit on nobody. I ain't trying to get nobody's pocket. I'm always trying to give. You know, hey, like y'all give it to me, I've been trying to give it the best. I recently moved from Los Angeles to Moreno Valley. And that's 75 miles from my job. 75 going and 75 coming. 150 miles a day I drive to work. And that's rough. But God put these children in my life and I got to feed them. And it wasn't too safe where we was living at. You know, if you don't know the colors of the day in Los Angeles or some places, you might get killed. You know, if the color red today and you got on blue, you can very well get shot in the head. Yeah. If you drive in a red car, you can very well get the car killed. You know. So I had to do better for my family. I had to make some sacrifices. I come around here low down and do the dope fiend. Only sacrifice I was make was, hey, giving up the cotton. That's it. Yeah. It's all about hate. You get yours and I get mine. And you know, I got these four children out there, and man, they happy. One of them graduated last week. And he wore his suit. He wore it last week, I wore it this week. He was sharp then, and hey, I'm sharp now. But that's how it is, you know, like the happy out there, you know, like it's better out there, and you know, like I just have to give up this, I had to sacrifice a little stuff. And most of the time I get home, I'm dead. I'm weak, you know. But that's what I have to do. You know, God's been good to me in this program, because he reached down in that pit, and pulled me out. See, I thought everybody was against me, including God. But God reached out in that pit and while I was low down and dirty doping and pulled me out. You know. And if it wasn't for the grace of God, I wouldn't be here. Yeah. I love Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah. I love Narcotics Anonymous. They come around here, the elevator's broke, you have to work the steps. It's not no free rides. You gotta, you know, gotta do some things. You know, you gotta be a service. I moved out to Moreno Valley, and I had 8 years, and I was a GFR alternate. And that was all right. You know, because I want to be a service. I know where to keep me clean. Service won't keep me clean. But it's hard to use if you ain't one of them service meetings squabbling. It's hard to use, you know. Yeah. And that's all it's about, a big old squabble. And I like to squabble, so it rolled up my head. I like a good argument, you know. Like I say, my life is real good as a direct result of you people and Narcotics Anonymous. And that's all I have to say. Thank you for letting me share.